Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome back to the DNF1 F1 podcast. I hope that you're all doing well, and thank you as always for being here. My name is Adam Burns, and it's just going to be me flying solo for this episode of the podcast. And in this episode, I'm going to be talking to you guys, reflecting on what went down during the sprint race at Miami, and of course, what went down during the main race qualifying session for Sunday's Miami Grand Prix. Now, of course, quick warning, if you haven't checked out the sprint race and the main qualifying session already, to avoid any spoilers, I'd heavily recommend that you pause this podcast and head over to wherever you get your F1 content, check out the sprint race, check out the qualifying session, then head on back over to me. And then, of course, you can listen to me whilst I reflect and talk about what went down at this weekend's sprint race and, of course, the main qualifying session as well. So if you are still with me, and I hope that's pretty much all of you, but of course, if you went back to check the race, welcome back. But if you are still with me, we're going to be talking about this sprint race. And I thought we'd start there, seeing as I brought that up already. And once again, Max Verstappen doing GOAT things at the moment in the Red Bull, dominating from start to finish. Obviously, he was pole position for the sprint race. And, you know, despite the threat potentially of Charles Leclerc and maybe one or two behind that was luring to seize an opportunity if it came, it never really looked any doubt for Max Verstappen. It was a great, solid drive from him, consolidating that good performance in qualifying where he almost looked a little bit surprised that he was able to get it on pole position for the sprint. But he never really looked under any serious pressure, always able to keep Leclerc within an arm's length to avoid any threat. Of course, you know, avoiding being caught in the DRS section, that's obviously quite important for Max to get away from Leclerc. DRS obviously is available a lap earlier than it has been in previous years. So it's ever so more important now to build up an early lead. And he did that quite comfortably and was able to lead from start to finish. Charles Leclerc, got to have a big shout out for him because, you know, after free practice, he made that hilarious error, which obviously saw him take a bit of a spin before the final section, of course, just below the bridge. And he was trying to reverse out in sprint qualifying. It was kind of like that scene from Austin Powers where he's trying to reverse out with that vehicle. And it's really hilarious if you haven't seen it already. Both the film and, of course, qualifying, of course, for the sprint race. But, yeah, you know, he recovered that really well. Obviously, for practice, he wasn't able to have any practice done at all, Charles Leclerc. So to be able to, you know, go from that, and obviously how important practice is in a sprint weekend, to go into sprint quali, put it on the front row, and then go on and finish P2 quite comfortably as well, it must be said, because even though he didn't really have the pace to beat Verstappen today, he pretty much kept the likes of Perez, his teammate Carlos Sainz, and obviously the McLarens at arm's length quite comfortably. So, you know, kudos to Charles Leclerc. I think that's a great drive from him. Great performance to get 7 points for the team. You know, so well deserved there. And then, of course, Sergio Perez rounding off the top three in the sister Red Bull. Again, Perez was a little bit out of shape after qualifying. You know, he qualified behind Leclerc, but he just wasn't really able to catch him. And probably a large part of that was because he was stuck behind Daniel Ricciardo in the early stages of the sprint race. But once he got ahead of Ricciardo after a very good move early on, he just wasn't really able to catch Leclerc. He obviously narrowed the gap a little bit, but Leclerc seemed to have him covered off as well. So that Ferrari, once again, working very well on its tyres and looks a pretty handy race car, which obviously serves them well for when eventually they'll put some upgrades on the car, which I'm sure many Ferrari fans listening will be desperately hoping will come very, very soon. And I'm sure in Imola, we're going to see that next evolution of Ferrari and where they stock up compared to Red Bull. Big shout out to Daniel Ricciardo. Fantastic performance in the sprint from him. Obviously qualified very well in P4 on the Friday. Consolidated that by finishing fourth in the race. And even though he wasn't able to hold position ahead of Sergio Perez, he was still able to hold off Carlos Sainz for pretty much the whole sprint race. And, you know, I can honestly say I don't think Carlos Sainz really had a proper good go at Daniel Ricciardo. In a braking zone, Ricciardo always seemed to have just enough of a margin until the very, very end where Carlos went for that last ditch maneuver. He just wasn't able to get it done. So great job from Danny Ric to get some valuable points for the RB team. And, you know, it was a double point scoring performance for them because obviously Yuki Tsunoda finished ninth on the road behind Hamilton, but was obviously able to move into eighth place following a post-race penalty for Hamilton, which of course we'll talk about a little bit later on. So it was an all-round very good sprint performance for the RB team. Six valuable points for them in the Constructors' Championship, which I think takes them back above Haas in P6. So good stuff for them. And yeah, Carlos Sainz finishing in P5. He said after the race that just didn't have enough speed on the straight. So obviously a bit of a tweak on the setup perhaps for Ferrari, which of course you can do now between the sprint race and the main race. You can have a switch in the setup outside of Parc Fermé conditions. So that's obviously a new change they brought for this year. And then that's followed up by Oscar Piastri in P6 and Nico Hülkenberg for the Haas team in P7. Another good drive from him. So that was the top eight scorers. Going into the race itself, now, the first person you're probably thinking of, if you hadn't have already checked out this sprint race, where's Lando Norris? Because Lando Norris obviously didn't qualify greatly. He qualified P9, I believe, in the sprint, and obviously needed to make up some places. And there was a bit of an expectation on Lando that he was going to be one of the guys to beat this weekend because McLaren have bought, I think it was 10 upgrades. It's practically a brand new car, this McLaren, and it looked very, very mighty. And I think from what we saw, the limited practice that we had, and from certain phases of qualifying, especially SQ2 when he was fastest on the mediums, it looked like Lando Norris might have had the best car underneath him to challenge Max Verstappen and Red Bull. As it were, wasn't really able to show that in sprint qualifying. He kind of let himself down with a subpar first sector in the final run, so obviously that really cost him. And he was the victim of what was probably deemed a racing incident at the start. So going into that incident at the start, which took Lando Norris out of the race, unfortunately, which is very unfortunate for him, we had the incident between the two Aston Martins, of course, Lando Norris on the outside and Lewis Hamilton. Now, of course, if you have seen this, and I'm hoping that a lot of you guys have seen this incident already, because I'm going to talk about this in a bit more detail and give my thoughts on this, then hopefully this will make a little bit of sense. But I don't really think, looking at the incident, you can lay 100% of the blame on one driver in this incident. I've seen a lot of people talk about Lewis Hamilton being at fault here for being a bit overzealous, underbraking on the inside. You know, that phrase, going for a gap, that the late, great Ayrton Senna often championed, didn't quite pull it off. There was Lance Stroll, obviously, on the outside of Fernando Alonso that turned in a bit early, which obviously put a bit of a pincer movement on Fernando Alonso where he couldn't really go anywhere, which obviously, you know, played a part in the contact, which eventually Lando Norris ended up being ricocheted off the road because Stroll had gone into him following the contact with his teammate. It's hard to really lay the blame on one driver. I think, as I said, I looked at this a few times. Originally, I thought Lewis was a bit overzealous on the inside. Obviously, he's gone a bit wide. He's not quite hugged the apex because he's gone in a bit quick. But I do agree there was an opportunity for Lewis there, and I don't blame him for putting his car in there. Whether he would have avoided contact with Fernando Alonso if, you know, if he'd slowed down a bit more on the entry, I don't know. But I do think there's a gap to go for there. It just didn't quite control it in the way perhaps he would have wanted to. But then at the same time, as I said, you know, we talk about Lewis in that incident. Alonso obviously sees that coming in his mirrors. He said on the radio, obviously Lewis going in there quite hot. And obviously Lance turning in a little bit early from where he was as well. Four cars wide in that part of the corner. Lando Norris trying to go around the outside of all of that, gets tagged, he's out of the race. The unfortunate victim, that Stroll, was obviously taken out of the race as well following that incident. So it was very unfortunate for both of those guys. The stewards didn't really penalise anyone for this incident, so, you know, totally understandable, and I probably agree with that. I don't think you can lay the blame at one driver. I think it's a bit of Hamilton, it's a bit of Stroll, but, you know, those first corner incidents, especially at Miami, we've seen that a few times that since F1 has been to Miami, it just happens sometimes. And I think maybe the drivers would be a bit more mindful of this at the start of the main race on Sunday. Definitely something to look out for. I'm pretty certain Lando Norris will be a lot more mindful about where exactly he puts his car, because I'm pretty certain that he will not want to be taken out of the race tomorrow, because whilst, you know, points were lost in the sprint, you're only going to get 8 points for a win rather than losing 25 for winning the main race on Sunday. So yeah, very unfortunate for him. Obviously, you know, seeing as we're talking about Lewis Hamilton, it was quite interesting. Obviously, you know, Fernando Alonso's race was also compromised by that incident. We shouldn't forget about that. He wasn't able to score any points. So Aston Martin really lost out on both counts for both their drivers. It was a good opportunity to get points. Neither of them were able to do that, unfortunately. And they had to focus on the main race qualifying. Lewis Hamilton, definitely, that wasn't the only incident he was involved in. He was involved in a race-long battle with Kevin Magnussen. And again, I was looking on social media because a lot of incidents were quite aggressive, particularly from Kevin Magnussen. Some of the moves he was trying to pull off, you know, there was a few incidents where he'd, cut the chicane, breach track limits to stay ahead of Lewis, then obviously braking very, very late. Both drivers going off the road, you know, Magnussen was obviously braking quite late, forcing Lewis wide. And then, of course, cutting the corner again to stay ahead of him when he was on the outside of him. So many of these incidents, Kevin Magnussen really did not want to give up the place. Obviously, he had his teammate ahead of him. And, you know, Kevin Magnussen, upon reflection, when he got a couple of 10-second time penalties, I think he got two from those incidents alone. He might have got a couple more than that later on. But he was quite open and honest about these incidents. And he said that, you know, they were deserved penalties. But he was playing the game. He did what he had to do. And that was pretty much alluding towards a strategy that he was adopting to protect his teammate. He obviously felt that Hamilton was a threat, not only to himself, but also to his teammate Hülkenberg. And he decided to play the teammate game like he did in Jeddah to compromise those behind him just to make sure his teammate got some points for the team. It obviously worked out for Hülkenberg, worked out for Haas overall. The stewards and the FIA obviously been quite keen on trying to investigate this further, because they are obviously not happy with the level of conduct that Kevin Magnussen is kind of operating within, the driving standards and regulations at the moment. And I can understand that point. I think Jeddah, if it was a one-off, then, you know, fair enough. I mean, he was definitely pushing his luck in that particular race. And, you know, the RB team were obviously very unhappy after the Jeddah race, particularly Yuki Tsunoda, related to Kevin Magnussen's driving standards. And in this race, I think we can see a lot more of that, and I think the stewards obviously very keen to step in. At the point of recording, we haven't had any confirmation of what the stewards are going to do related to K-Mag's driving standards and unsportsmanlike behaviour or conduct, if you like, on the track. He has been given a 3 points penalty in addition to one of the penalties he received during the sprint race, so he's now on 8 penalty points for the season. Obviously, there is a limit of 12 before you receive a race ban, so he is quite close to that limit. So that's definitely one to keep an eye on for the future races coming up. So, yeah, quite interesting take of events. Hamilton himself, obviously, he would have been quite angry about the way Kevin Magnussen was driving, understandably. And but I must admit, you know, even though it was, how can I put this in the right way, not the best conduct of driving from Kevin Magnussen, I must admit, it was quite entertaining to watch. But I'm pretty certain if I was a Lewis Hamilton fan, I'd be pretty annoyed watching the way Kevin Magnussen was driving against him. But, you know, I think that unfortunately that's just the way it goes sometimes. You do get moments like that when people take overzealous risks and, you know, they don't always work out. But obviously K-Mag, as he said, probably quite open and honest, perhaps a bit too honest for his own good, because clearly, you know, stuff he was saying, like, I was just playing the game, or the penalties were deserved, implying that he was deliberately trying to, you know, drive beyond the agreed limits of what's fair and not to protect his teammate. And obviously we don't want to see drivers, you know, doing ridiculous things on purpose, even if it's to give their team a tactical advantage. It's not really driving in the right spirit. So it will be interesting to see what the stewards make of Kevin Magnussen's driving conduct and what future penalties or punishments that they may apply for that. But yeah, it wasn't ideal for Hamilton. He did obviously get past Magnussen and overtook Tsunoda just before the end, because there was a moment where both Magnussen and Hamilton went off the road. Tsunoda was able to undertake both of them on the inside at the beginning of the middle sector. And Hamilton caught Tsunoda at the end, overtook him, which was for P8 at the time. But Hamilton then got a 10-second time penalty, and that was for speeding in the pit lane. And this would have been following the safety car that came out following Lando Norris's and the Aston Martin driver's retirement from the race. The safety car that came out early on, Hamilton obviously going through the pit lanes because all the cars had to go straight through the pit lane to avoid the collision at turn one. And Hamilton, you know, whether he meant to or not, accidentally speeds in the pit lane, which was, you know, for a driver of experience, you know, it can happen to the best of us, but such a shame for him that he did that. It was a bit of a silly mistake. Unfortunately, it's cost him a point in the sprint, which would have annoyed him, I'm sure, after everything he'd been through earlier on with Magnussen, and obviously for Mercedes as well, because that was the only point that they were going to score. George Russell finishing all the way down in P12, and Hamilton, I believe, was relegated to P16. So, yeah, it's a bit of a shame for Hamilton in that incident, and that was pretty much all of the main story and talking points going through the sprint race. As I said already, another great drive from Max Verstappen, good performances from Charles Leclerc, Sergio Perez, Ricciardo obviously being the star of the sprint, finishing P4 in the RB, Sainz 5th, Piastri 6th, Hülkenberg getting some good points for Haas in 7th, and Tsunoda finishing in P8. In part 2 of this episode, I'm going to be talking about the main race qualifying session and what went down there. So catch me after the ad breaks.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So welcome back to the DNF1 F1 podcast, and obviously we're going to be talking about qualifying now. I did forget actually one thing that I did mention, forgot to mention from the sprint. That was Lando Norris. Obviously he had retired from the sprint race, and he'd walked across the track on a live track, quite similar to something that happened with Hamilton in Qatar last season. For those of you that remember that collision he had with his teammate George Russell, obviously the car was beached on the exit of turn one. Goes across the track to go towards a pit lane. Lando did the very same thing without permission, and he was reprimanded by the stewards and given a €50,000 fine, and a €25,000 fine, suspended for the rest of 2024 if he commits another breach or a similar breach to that. Basically, it was for leaving his car in the runoff area and walking back to the pits and crossing a live track in the process without getting permission. Lando responded to this, saying that he'd realised and it could have been very dangerous to him. So, an honest mistake, but I suppose just another reminder, as we saw in Qatar with Hamilton, that, you know, even though you can be quite angry and hot under the collar, all the adrenaline seething through you after what would have been a very disappointing start to that race for him, which ultimately ended his retirement, just got to remember to, you know, go off in a safe fashion. I'm hoping that certain elements of the press or the FIA won't give Lando too hard a time on this, because I remember some of the comments that were made about Lewis being a role model to the younger generation, and some of these antics, if you like, as it was described at the time, was actually quite unfair. And I'm trying to think what the source was or who it was that actually came out. I think Mohammed bin Salim had referred to Lewis as meant to be a role model, and it kind of come across as a bit of a dig at expense over something like this, which at the time I thought was quite unfair. Hopefully something similar isn't said about Lando Norris, but I'm sure a lot of people will probably point out that maybe something like that should be said, because, you know, we're all here for consistency. And, you know, Lewis Hamilton, despite his elite superstar position that he obviously warrants because of, you know, his reputation in the sport, and obviously beyond that, as a celebrity within that, you know, he's still an F1 driver, just like Lando Norris. Whether his reputation gives him that superstar status that Lando doesn't quite have yet, fair enough, but, you know, we're all here for consistency. All the drivers are all role models for different reasons, but I'm hoping Lando doesn't get any bad press for that, and, you know, we just move on. Honest mistake, you know, no harm done, but he'll learn for next time. So moving on to the main qualifying session, and let's start with Q1. We often start with Q1 when we talk about qualifying, and the bottom five from the Q1 session, we had Valtteri Bottas, Logan Sargeant, Daniel Ricciardo, Kevin Magnussen, and Zhou Guan Yu going out in Q1. And I suppose the first driver we need to talk about from Q1 is Daniel Ricciardo. Very disappointing for him that he finished P4 in the sprint after qualifying P4 in the sprint. You'd have thought Daniel would have definitely been one of the favourites to make sure that he went through into Q2, but he wasn't able to do it. And I think that was quite a shock because he'd been going so well this weekend, and, you know, that's really going to hurt him because obviously he proved from the sprint it's quite hard to overtake at Miami. Despite the sprint race actually being quite entertaining, I think it's proof that sprint races are usually better on tracks that are quite easy to overtake, like Brazil, for example. I wouldn't say Miami was the easiest track to overtake. We do get overtakes, but as I said, you know, it was quite difficult because of what went down in the sprint race. Sainz obviously not able in a Ferrari to overtake an RB car obviously is quite telling. Maybe that was setup related. Maybe Daniel wasn't able to get used to some of the changes for the setup, because I imagine they probably would have focused the setup a bit more towards the Sunday race. But maybe they should have focused more on getting good track position in qualifying. Proved to work a treat for him in the sprint, so he's obviously going to have a tough time. He also got a three-place grid penalty. It's worth mentioning that from what happened in China. We got a three-place grid penalty there for, I think it was a safety car infringement, if I remember right. I think overtaking Hülkenberg. Zhou Guan Yu also has a three-place grid penalty as well for a similar offence. So they're going to be starting at the back of the grid. Obviously, as I mentioned already, Valtteri Bottas, Logan Sargeant, and Kevin Magnussen also out. It's quite interesting, actually. There was an incident in the pit lane where Zhou was reported to the stewards for overtaking Ricciardo himself in the pit lane queue. And this is something that the race director has instructed the drivers to not do. He's wanted them to queue up and make sure that if you're in the fast lane, you get priority and you don't join that until everyone's gone through. But you see a few cars every now and then trying to find little gaps and go through. And I'm quite interested to get people's thoughts on this, because Crofty and Martin Brundle mentioned this on commentary, and it was quite humorous to hear. But as a British person myself, the rules of queuing are usually quite clear. If you're in the queue, you have priority and go forward. You can't jump in the queue or cut in. You have to wait till everyone goes, wait your turn, and then join at the back. And it looks like F1 were trying to adopt an approach like that for Miami, maybe because the pit lane is quite narrow. They usually are for street circuits, you know, to compare it to where we were in China last time out. The pit lane is obviously quite wider and longer, so you're able to have effectively two cars side by side where you can kind of decide who's going to go through at the very end. But it seems like F1 are trying to put their foot down on this and stop drivers from doing that. I think Hülkenberg was reprimanded for doing something similar in China when he overtook I think it might have been Zhou himself, actually, outside of the fast lane. But let me know your thoughts, guys. What do you think? Because I'm not really a big fan of some of the antics that go on in the pit lane when the cars are trying to go through, you know, the slowing down, the stopping, trying to wait for a gap and this, that and everything else. For me, I just want the cars to go out the pit lane, then they can sort themselves out. But it's all this gamesmanship and stuff going on. They've obviously got the maximum delta time that they have to adhere to when they go past the safety car line at the end of the pit lane. So, you know, I think it's just a consequence of all these changes that are happening and the drivers just trying to get whatever advantage that they can, which will help them generate the best lap time that they can. So it's quite an interesting talking point. I'm sure it won't be the last that we'll hear of it. I'm sure we'll see many more incidents. I'm sure the stewards will try and concoct some kind of other variation to the rules to prevent what is going on happening. And I'm sure we'll see the teams and drivers find new ways to get around that, as they always seem to do every time they introduce something new. So we'll have to wait and see what they do. Big shout out, of course, to the Alpine guys. Gasly and Ocon did pretty well in Q1. Alpine, they've slowly started to make progress. And I think, You know, we can always point the finger and laugh at Alpine because of all the issues that they've been having and how badly they've started the season. But it must be said, they have been making some progress, and I don't think it's gone unnoticed. Gasly, fifth fastest in Q1, put in a great lap, arguably one of the best value for money laps, if you like, in this qualifying session. And then Esteban Ocon also in P11. So both of them are comfortably through. And yeah, it was good stuff to see. Q2 now, the big shock, Fernando Alonso out in Q2. He's one of the only drivers on the grid so far this season before the main qualifying session to qualify for Q3 in every single race. He was unable to do that. And it must be said, he didn't really put a great lap together. I think the Aston's really struggling in Q2. Fernando made a lot of errors on his hot lap, and it saw him qualify in, I think it was P14 in the end, but we saw Stroll, Gasly, Ocon, Albon, and Alonso that were all eliminated. So the two Alpines are out, Albon out as well. Again, he's made Q2 in every session for Williams. He's not been able to make a Q3 appearance yet, so still a bit more to do there for Williams. And of course, Stroll out qualifying his teammate, but not able to get through either. Hamilton in the Mercedes at the time, putting a great lap to get into P3 in Q2. So there was definitely some hope there for Mercedes at the time. And it's been a funny one for Mercedes because, you know, there have been times throughout this weekend where they look decent, but then there have been more occasions where they look like they're still struggling. And it's hard to tell how they're going to do for the race on Sunday. I'm sure, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit later on when we talk about Q3 relative to their performance. But still a lot of fact-finding, still a lot of questions that need to be answered at Mercedes. And this isn't going to be a short-term fix. It's probably not going to be the last time I mention this season. I'll probably talk about it again for the race review that I'll be recording tomorrow after the main race on Sunday. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But it was nice to see Lewis a bit more in the groove after having a very difficult period during the sprint race. And, you know, George Russell's not been on it either. He has struggled a little bit as well. He was quite silent and caught in the midfield during the sprint race. And, you know, often this season it's been him that's been quite consistent. But Hamilton seems to have found a bit of an edge of late. And, long may that continue for Hamilton. He definitely needs to up his game a little bit. I think the excitement and anticipation of what will be for him when he goes to Ferrari next year will obviously be on his mind, but there's still a job for him to do at Mercedes, and I'm sure he will want to prove to everybody that he is still operating at a very high level, which understandably is very difficult at the moment in the current Mercedes. And I'm sure he'd rather not be fighting away for P7 and 8 with the Haases, and he'd much rather be fighting at the front with the likes of Verstappen and Leclerc and Sainz and Perez, for example. So let's move on to Q3 now. And I think a topic of discussion for Q3 was traffic. And I think this came throughout the entire qualifying session. I think we saw it in sprint qualifying as well. There were quite a few occasions, drivers getting in the way traffic-wise. It wasn't an easy track to sort of avoid impeding other cars. I don't think we saw anyone get any penalties. I think the closest one we got was Tsunoda impeding, I think it was Sargent, when he was blocking the apex of the final hairpin, which obviously, you know, it's a bit of a looser angle. It's not so tight compared to other hairpins, just the way the corner runs out on the outside on the exit. So, you know, Tsunoda got away with that one. Sainz got away with another one as well. I can't remember which car it was. It might have been Hülkenberg that was being slightly impeded by Sainz. He just got out of the way, so he wasn't blocking the apex. But quite a lot of traffic on this circuit. So, you know, a lot of drivers complaining about that. I think there was one occasion Leclerc was complaining about a Williams who was quite some way ahead of him. So not quite sure what the complaint was about, really. Just got hot into the corner. Maybe he lost some downforce. I don't know. But in terms of Q3, quite an interesting session. We saw Lando Norris on the first lap of this session try and do a lap on the medium tyres, which, if you cast your minds back to sprint qualifying in SQ2, he'd set the fastest time of the entire session, which would have been enough for pole position in the sprint if he'd have done it in SQ3. He did it on the medium tyres in SQ2, so clearly he thought perhaps he put us on a set of mediums. He might be able to do something about that in Q3 today. Didn't really work on the first run. He had to put a set of softs on afterwards to do his final run. I think it was about 0.6 of a second off Max Verstappen's time at the time when he'd set it at the first run in Q3. The track was quite a bit cooler than it was during the peak temperatures of the session. That probably played a part as well, which allowed the softer tyres to come into their own a bit better. I think we saw Alex Albon earlier in the session talking about the soft tyres only lasting for about six corners. And it was very important, you know, for those drivers that could really keep the tyre temperatures under control, keep the soft tyres from degrading rapidly so they could extract the performance. And I think we saw a lot of drivers towards the end of the lap, they were really going wide at the final hairpin. So clearly they were struggling to keep that grip all the way throughout the lap. In terms of the overall qualifying session itself in Q3, no surprises for who was on pole position. Max Verstappen once again on pole position. It's his seventh straight pole position in Formula One, his 38th in his career. The first driver to get six pole positions in the first six races of the season since Alain Prost in 1993, who went on to dominate the World Drivers' Championship for Williams that season. The way Max Verstappen is going, he's very much following suit on that one. But once again, you know, Max did that in the first run. And I think a lot of the drivers did their best times in the first run. So it's rather curious at the moment this season. And maybe it's just me thinking this, but I'd be interested to get other people's thoughts on this. What is it with some of the drivers at the moment and being able to set their best times during the first run in Q3? Because traditionally, and it's not because, you know, they choose to do it then, it's just, you know, circumstantial and what they aim to do. But the drivers at the moment seem to have a hard time, those that get through to Q3, setting their fastest lap times in the final run. Now, bear in mind, when you do Q3, or at any qualifying session, you'd expect the fastest times to come at the end of the session, because the track is at its most rubbered in point, obviously the most traction possible. The temperatures are a little bit lower, and Miami was very, very hot. So when the temperatures are a little bit cooler, obviously that means that the tyres should be able to last a little bit longer. They won't overheat as much, which means that the grip will last a little bit longer. And that's obviously quite beneficial, especially the amount of time that's lost in the final sector for some of these drivers. But for some reason, a lot of the drivers weren't able to improve. I think the only three drivers I could remember that improved on their final Q3 runs was Perez, Norris and Hamilton. And Hamilton and Norris didn't really do good laps, so it was quite easy for them to improve. I think Hamilton and Russell did their final laps on mediums because they ran out of new softs to use. So, you know, saying all the problems at Mercedes, they didn't have any new softs. So, you know, that was understandable for them. But other than that, it was only Perez after that. So very curious at the moment that, you know, as I said, I don't think it's just this race. I think I've seen a few races this year where some of the drivers in Q3 have set their best lap times in the first run. So maybe that's just owing to the sensitivity of the cars. You know, conditions seem to change a little bit later on. Maybe minor changes, but they seem to have quite a big effect on performance on these cars. So definitely want to keep an eye on. I'll be curious to hear what other people think about that theory. You know, be interesting to see if you guys agree with me or not, or what your thoughts on that. But yeah, just let me know at DNF1_official on social media, or if you, you know, like the YouTube podcast, you can let me know in the race review that we're going to do tomorrow. Following Max Verstappen, of course, we had Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz, so both of the Ferraris, for the first time in a while, qualifying alongside each other near the front end of the grid, which I'm sure, you know, a lot of Ferrari fans listening to this, or, you know, fans of the sport at the moment following the pecking order, would expect Ferrari to have their two cars alongside each other near the front. So good to see from them. Again, another great performance from Charles Leclerc. Definitely nailed his first run. Wasn't able to repeat that on the final run. Carlos Sainz, again, similar fashion. Only 0.07 of a second off his teammate, getting alongside him in P3. So that's going to be quite good for Ferrari, because they obviously have good race pace. I don't think anyone's questioning that. Tyre degradation, I think, is going to be so much more important in the main race. I'm sure Ferrari, like they did in China, made some setup changes to the car that will help them in the race a bit better. Didn't really work out for them in China, but it could work better for them in Miami. And that's going to be important, because it may provide them with an opportunity to really try and attack Verstappen and create some pressure on him and Red Bull. Sergio Perez, of course, narrowly missing out on getting in between the two Ferraris. It's only 0.005 of a second off Carlos Sainz in P4. So Red Bull are really going to have to hope that Sergio Perez can overtake at least one of the Ferraris off the start. So it's an interesting dynamic there. Red Bull, Ferrari, Ferrari, Red Bull. It's going to be a good battle between those four cars tomorrow. Will McLaren join that mix? They could do. Lando Norris certainly has a good car underneath him with all those upgrades. It does look fast. How fast it's going to be in the race, we're not sure. I don't think it was, you know, we don't know how it would have been because he was taken out of the sprint. So he'll be one to watch just behind those guys on the third row. Oscar Piastri qualified just behind Lando. And I think it's worth pointing out that Oscar Piastri has 50% of the upgrades that Lando has got this weekend. I think Zak Brown during FP1 on Friday confirmed that Oscar has half the upgrades. And hopefully they all work accordingly as they should do at McLaren, and Oscar should get the rest of the package in Imola. So just under a tenth behind Norris. So the McLaren's finally poised to be in that fight with Red Bull and Ferrari tomorrow. So definitely ones to keep an eye on. They could be in the fight as well. And then after that, you've got four tenths after Piastri to Russell and Hamilton in the two Mercs. Very much on their own at the moment, but I think they'll both be delighted with the fact that even though they're quite a margin off the top three teams, they got quite a few cars between them and Aston Martin. So definitely a good opportunity for those guys to get some points. And it looks like Mercedes are much more competitive now as this weekend has gone on. I think after sprint quali in the sprint race, they were really struggling. It looks like they've cleared that midfield pack and they're well established as four fastest at the moment. And then, of course, I think we've got one of the stars of qualifying, Nico Hülkenberg, once again in the Haas, qualifying in P9. And, you know, we talk about Hülkenberg a lot as being a bit of a specialist in qualifying. And I think this in part has played a big part as to why he's been signed up by Sauber for 2025, which of course becomes the Audi Works team in 26. I don't think it's just as simple as Audi want a German driver in their car. Hülkenberg has proven on merit that he probably deserves that seat at the moment. And, you know, his race runs have been pretty good. He was solid in the sprint, consolidated that with P7. And I think he's proven that Haas have come a long way. They are looking quite handy at the moment. They're not just quali merchants. They've got a decent race car underneath. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Hülkenberg scores some more points in tomorrow's race. I really wouldn't. It's another solid job from him. And then Yuki Tsunoda didn't work out brilliantly in qualifying in the sprint. I think he was down in 15th, but he recovered it well in P8, avoided the early collision between Norris and the two Astons, managed to stay ahead of Hamilton at the end, owing to his penalty. So, you know, to qualify for P10 Tsunoda, that's a bit more like it from him. I think there was a little bit of a concern after China that perhaps Ricciardo had found an edge on him, and this, you know, followed through into the Miami sprint and sprint quali. But it looks like he's got the edge back over his teammate with a good qualifying performance. He will have a lot of pacey drivers behind him, I'm sure. But if the sprint was anything to go by, we know it's quite tough to overtake in Miami. So an opportunity for Tsunoda in P10. So that is the final grid order. Of course, it will be interesting to see if anyone can catch Max Verstappen tomorrow, but it should be quite an interesting race. You know, looking at the pecking order in qualifying, at the risk of jinxing it, I don't think it's as clear-cut as Red Bull are going to run away and dominate. I think the Ferraris are definitely good in the mix. They're in a good qualifying position, so they don't have to overtake many cars. They're right in the thick of it. McLaren obviously look quick as well. How quick they're going to be with the upgrades will be interesting to see. Lando Norris obviously got the bulk of those, so it'll be interesting to see how his progress goes on. And, you know, anything can happen in these races. You know, we have seen safety cars, a rightly timed safety car may jeopardize the pecking order a little bit and create a little bit of chaos. I think that's probably what the fans will want to see. And of course, we'll talk about that all in great detail during the Miami Grand Prix race review. Now, because it's a bank holiday in the UK this weekend, that episode is going to come out later on Monday rather than early Monday morning that you normally used to. So the audio one will be out some point Monday afternoon. And I think the YouTube video, that version may come out Tuesday morning. But it will be all out for you guys very soon, when, especially if you're in the UK, when you're all back to your normal queue. If you're in the States or in other countries, it will obviously come out at different times based on your time zone. But thank you as always for tuning in, guys. Hope that you enjoyed the sprint race and qualifying review podcast. We'll be back, of course, with the race review. Myself and Courtney will be doing that one. But in the meantime, make sure to follow the show on your favorite podcasting platform. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review as well. A lot of you guys have done that this season, and we're really grateful for the support. Please do keep them coming. And yeah, of course, we'll reward you by reading them out on future episodes. But until then, guys, as always, thanks for tuning in. Please stay safe, and we'll see you in the next episode of the DNF1 F1 podcast. Take care. You can follow us on all our socials. Search at DNF1 underscore official on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. Don't forget to follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and also leave us a 5-star review. If you're not first, you're probably DNF1.
Sports Social Podcast Network.